Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 183, entitled, How to Fix a Broken Heart, Practice Emotional First Aid, and Deal with the Loss of a Loved One, I chat with Dr. Guy Winch. Dr. Guy Winch is a licensed psychologist, author, keynote speaker, and the presenter of one of the top five most inspiring TED Talks of all time. In today's episode, Guy talks about the science behind heartbreak and gives us both an empirically and scientifically proven formula for overcoming heartache and getting back on our feet. He talks about the four things you absolutely must do after a breakup, how to take control of your addictive and obsessive mind, and how to emotionally heal and grow from your experience. Dr. Winch brings a unique approach to the topic of heartbreak and blends science and sensibility into the perfect remedy for emotional healing. If you're wondering how to fix a broken heart, deal with the loss of a loved one, and get back on your feet today, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Hey, if you haven't checked out our Elite Life Nutrition products, go to EliteLifeNutrition.com right now and check them out today. We've got five powerful supplements, including magnesium citrate, calcium, ashwagandha, women's multivitamin, and our best-selling men's multivitamin, and we're unraveling so many more very soon. All Elite Life Nutrition products are made in America and manufactured in state-of-the-art facilities. We use the best technology in the world and the highest quality ingredients to ensure the products we make are precisely what you want. Look, I've been fooled too many times by supplement brands in the past, and I hate seeing so many great people like you without a reliable option of healthy supplements to go to. At Elite Life Nutrition, we've done all the research and all the hard work to ensure the very best supplements in the world. No more guesswork, no more crappy supplements, and no more not knowing what you get. Elite Life Nutrition has you covered. Go to EliteLifeNutrition.com now and order one of our products today. Also, if you've purchased one of our supplements and can leave a review on Amazon for us, we'd truly, truly appreciate it. It takes like 30 seconds to do and goes a very, very long way in helping us out. If you do review, shoot me an email and let me know. I'll be happy to send you a personal thank you note back. Also, let me know which products you'd like us to consider making in the near future. We're always happy and open to listening. My personal email is justin@elitemanmagazine.com. Again, shoot me a review and also shoot me some feedback as well on what you'd like us to consider making. justin@elitemanmagazine.com, and the website again is elitelifenutrition.com for all our incredible products. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Dr. Guy Winch from GuyWinch.com. Dr. Guy, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
You're very welcome, and it's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time. I actually just came across your book fairly recently, and it's just got released, actually, I think within the last couple months. How to Fix a Broken Heart, which I want to talk about mostly in today's episode. You also have a couple other really interesting books, which I might want to dive into too. But the broken heart topic is a big one, especially for guys. It's often overlooked and I think neglected in terms of men speaking about it, men knowing how to handle it. Where do you come into play with this? How do you help people in general, but especially, you know, because my audience is primarily men. How do you help guys in this aspect?
Well, first of all, I think it's very, very neglected. I mean, one of the reasons I wrote the book, I also have a TED Talk about the same topic. And one of the reasons I did those things is because men in general don't have permission to talk about feelings in a broad sense, but they certainly don't have permission to talk about heartbreak. And societally, we kind of tend to associate heartbreak with something that happens to, yeah, teenagers, that kind of thing. No one's going into work, you know, in their 30s and saying to their boss, I need a couple of days off because my girlfriend broke up with me. It's just not something that we would do. But the research shows something very different. The research shows that heartbreak and romantic heartbreak cause extremely vivid, sharp grief reactions that can really rival any kind of other form of grief that we're familiar with and be extremely painful and extremely difficult to get over. So we actually need to pay much more attention to legitimize this and to understand it much more than we are at the moment.
How have you found that men deal with breakups differently as opposed to the way women deal with them?
women would probably talk more about them with friends and try and wrap their head around it and understand it and understand what happened. And women also tend to be more supportive sometimes to other women whose heart is broken. Guys really will, you know, they'll be there for a buddy if his heart is broken, but for how long, right? I mean, so they'll show up that first day, I'll get together with them over the weekend. But if a month later the guy is still a wreck and wants to talk about it and wants to cry about it, a lot of the friends are going to be like, dude, you know, man up, grow up, whatever the thing is, but you should be moving on. And that's all very well, and it could be that the heartbroken guy is feeling that he too should be moving on, but if he's not, and sometimes it takes way longer than a month to get over these things, then what? Then not only is he without social support, but he's also feeling like an idiot because he should be over something he's not over.
Yeah, and who do you think deals with, I mean, it might be sort of a loaded question, but who do you think deals with breakups better, men or women? Because like you said, women tend to have more of that support, and guys tend to try to be tough about it. And, you know, even their buddies will be like, you know, get over it, dude, like man up, that kind of thing, where it's like guys still have that emotional side. And if they're not talking about it and expressing it, you know, that can harbor a lot of problems for a long time.
Look, so since the TED Talk and the book came out, that has just been a few months, I've gotten hundreds, if not thousands, of emails and messages from people all around the world who are dealing with heartbreak. And I can tell you that from those, and we're not talking about a small sample size, hundreds, if not thousands, it's pretty much split down the middle evenly between men and women. The time frames that we're talking about can go from anything from this happened last week to this happened 8 years ago, I'm still not over it. Wow. So I'm finding that there's a big difference between what men and women might express, but there's not a ton of difference between what men and women might feel internally. The internal process, the emotional pain of it, the psychological process people go through, those are very similar. What they'll express outwardly might vary, but they, you know, how much this hurts, how centralizing it is, how shattering it is, that really is, you know, nothing to do with gender. It's just how it impacts all of us.
All right. So in your experience, Guy, you don't really notice a difference in terms of who's more successful at getting over a breakup. Like basically it's split down the line 50-50. Guys and girls equally have the same struggles when it comes to getting past it.
So yeah, but actually, you know, the word you use there, successful, right? My experience is that most people are very unsuccessful. In other words, part of the problem here is that we kind of assume there are two things that work, and they've always worked. Time. You know, time heals all, and getting support to whatever extent we can get it. And so most of us do those two things. You know, we're heartbroken, we'll wait it out, we'll try and get support. We are not aware, or most of us are not aware, that there is much more we need to be doing to recover. There is much more we can be doing. There is much more we should be paying attention to that can expedite the recovery, can make it a cleaner, healthier recovery. And so there, we have to become much more proactive in healing from heartbreak than we are. We're pretty passive usually. I'll talk to friends when they call and I'll wait it out. There's so much we should be doing and so much we shouldn't be doing.
Is it true, in along the same lines, is it true that women will be more emotional in, say, the first few weeks or a month, and then guys will be like, and they'll get over it after that to a certain degree, but then guys will hold it in, or they won't be emotional for like the first month or two, and then it kind of comes out later on?
Not necessarily. In other words, again, there's a difference in between what men and women express about their emotions, much smaller difference in terms of what they actually experience emotionally. In experience, if a guy is not feeling that emotional about it for the first month, and then suddenly they are, something happened. There was some kind of switch either in their head, in reality, something happened. It's just not likely that they will suddenly start to become, you know, have this delayed reaction. I don't see that much.
Okay, so I think that is a myth, because I've heard that a few times with some different experts I've had on, relationship experts and psychologists of various sorts. That seems to be like a common theme. Not necessarily that they're saying it, but it seems to be something that they've heard.
Yeah, so I would put that under myth, especially when it comes to heartbreak.
Okay. And just so we understand a little bit more of your background, you're a licensed psychologist. What have you, or what has happened in your life personally to make you go down this road of writing these books about breakups and heartbreak? And how have you learned sort of the best process to get over this?
So it's interesting. For me, when I became a psychologist, which is quite a few years ago now, I was never interested in like severe psychopathology and schizophrenia and, you know, manic depression and any of these things. I was much more interested in how regular people can remain and maintain their emotional health. And there was very little about that that I had read in the literature at the time, but I knew I wanted to be in private practice, and I knew the people coming to my private practice were going to be regular people with jobs who have issues, whether it's, you know, in their relationships and their ambitions and, you know, their mood, whatever it is. And so I wanted to focus on, you know, what regular people go through. And then when I started after graduate school keeping up with the journals and reading, I started to see a lot of studies were coming out looking at very regular topics that we all experience, like failure, like rejection, like loneliness, like heartbreak. And to me, that was all very fascinating because these studies were done really for other scientists. I mean, that's the unfortunate thing about studies. They're often written by scientists for scientists. And even as somebody with a PhD, I would sometimes try and read these things and say, oh my God, why did they say that? It took me like an hour to read a paragraph because they said it's so complicated unnecessarily. But I was also finding there's so much valuable information there. Their findings can be really translated into actual interventions, into actually things I can do, my patients can do. And I would bring those findings into my practice and suggest them to my patients and see the ones that were working and the ones that were not. And that's how I came up, you know, with this idea of writing books that looked at regular everyday life experiences for regular everyday life people and trying to bring the science of psychology into something like that.
Yeah, just on a side note, those studies can be really tough to read. And for anyone who does want to look up some research, PubMed is a great resource. And a good little tip, too, just if you get stuck in trying to read, you know, the incredible density of the literature that they have on there in various topics, whether that's health-related, psychology-related, a good little trick is to scroll down to the conclusion or the results of, like, say, studies. You can often get a good synopsis of what happened in the study and give you a good idea of how to interpret those results as opposed to trying to read, you know, layers and layers of complex information. But I think you're absolutely right in terms of, you know, your approach to this and how you, because I love the fact that you talk about the science of emotional health, and I want to dive into that in a moment. But I think it's very important to look at that end of things and then also bring it back to how to apply that in everyday life. And it's really cool to see someone like you who's made that connection and actually brought it into like mainstream psychology and mainstream sort of self-help of how to actually how people can go through and actually deal with their breakups and their heartbreak. Guy, I'm curious though, is there or has there been a heartbreak in your own life that perhaps led you down this path and an experience that you went through at some point that, you know, caused you a lot of hurt?
I get asked that all the time. It's the most natural question. And I really wish. And when I wrote this book, my editor said to me, don't you have any really good personal story to put there? And I'm like, I feel like I need to go out and get heartbroken just for the story. I need a good story. I don't have a good story of my own. I apologize profusely. I know it's much more powerful when I can talk about this as coming from my own pain and my own experience. It's not that I haven't been heartbroken. It's just in the most boring possible ways. And so it's like there's just nothing interesting about the story. So I do apologize for not having that. But I as a therapist, I am with my patients, and I go through this journey with them. And in that sense, I've been through hundreds of stories, and I lived those through my patients. And so I do have a good, data set from which to choose, and from the place from which I'm speaking is that experience, albeit vicarious.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that's a good thing. I mean, you still get that experience through, you know, your patients, and that's oftentimes the best way to learn. I say this all the time on the podcast. You don't actually have to go through things yourself. The way anybody learns is through the experiences of the ones that we have personally, but also the experiences that other people have. And then we take that and learn from that and obviously grow from that. But diving into some of your techniques, to some of your processes in the book, How to Fix a Broken Heart. What are some of the steps? What are some of the things that you mentioned earlier that most people aren't successful in doing? How do we apply those things to a broken heart, a breakup especially? I mean, there's some other things I want to dive into as well regarding the broken heart, but a breakup specifically, let's focus on that. What are some of the techniques that jump off the plate and right away can be applied?
So, all right. So I'm gonna say one, but I have to give a preamble first because the context kind of is important. One of the series of studies that I looked at when I was researching the book were these functional MRI studies, these brain scans of people who were heartbroken. And what the scientists found is that the same areas of the brain are getting activated when people are going through heartbreak that you see activated when opioid addicts, heroin addicts, are withdrawing from heroin and when cocaine addicts are withdrawing from cocaine. In other words, the whole reward center areas of the brain are really getting activated in a very specific way. Now, I'm saying this because, you know, people say to me, so what, are you saying love is an addiction and heartbreak is the withdrawal from that substance? And people say that, you know, like in a challenging way. And my response is always, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. And it's not just what I'm saying. It's what the researchers are saying. There's even a discussion about in the research, by the way, this would not pass the sniff test in real life, but a discussion among the researchers about whether love should be classified as an addiction in the first place because of how it operates in the brain and how similar it looks. Now, I say all of that because if you understand that when you're really heartbroken romantically, you are going through the withdrawal from that person, from that relationship, from that experience in a similar way that a heroin addict would be, then it would be very useful in explaining your behavior in those moments. Because one of the things that is very difficult for people when they're heartbroken is that we really act extraordinarily out of character. We do things we would never do. We grovel. We text 100 times in an hour. We really just put ourselves in all kinds of horrible situations. We beg. And it's out of character. And it's, oh, I would never do that. And then we're doing that. And it's so perplexing to us. And we feel like, oh my goodness, I must be going crazy. Now, when you see a heroin addict who's jonesing for a fix, it wouldn't surprise anyone that they would pretty much do anything, and they do indeed pretty much do anything to get that fix. Well, of course, they're addicted to heroin. Of course, they're doing that. Well, if it's very, very similar, that's why you're doing. What you're doing. And because we often can't get a real fix, we can't get the relationship back, we compromise for the quote-unquote methadone version of that. And the methadone version of that is texting the person, is calling the person, is stalking them on social media, is trying to find out exactly what they're doing and why they're doing it, or whether they went to that party with their cousin because they said they might go, and really I should find out if they went for whatever reason. And so I'm going to spend hours stalking every person I know on Instagram that's related to them in case there's a picture that has them at the edge of it. You know, and people do all these things, and of course all that does is make the heartbreak hurt more. All that does is make you miss the person more. All that does is make you think of them more. All that does is reinforce the very things you're trying to actually not reinforce.
Yeah, so how do you go about doing the behaviors that step away from that mindset and help you? I mean, you're talking about some really cool stuff here. This is stuff that I love, the functional MRIs. They actually did the brain scans. They can see that the same thing is happening to someone who has a heroin addiction or opioid addiction in the brain as someone who just broke up with a loved one or who got dumped by a loved one. Like, that is incredible. That is very profound. How do we step away from or break away from those chemicals, those neurotransmitters going off in the brain and having us do crazy stalker-like behavior, like you put it, the methadone version of things? What are some things that we can do to make sure we kind of break away from our internal chemistry being all off and out of whack?
So look, and by the way, I'm gonna, you know, headline, and I'm gonna say this right now. There are no real quick, easy answers here. I wish that at the end of the book, How to Fix a Broken Heart, I could say, and therefore do this, twist your nose, tap your ear twice, and you'll be done. No. There are no easy answers, but let's start with actually removing the drugs, right? Let's start with, really disconnecting from that person on social media, unfriending, unfollowing, blocking, and so to remove the temptation. And people said to me, but what if we can be friends? And I'm like, right now, no, you cannot be. If you want to be in 6 months' time when you're over her or him, then fine, you can give it a try then. But most people, the vast majority, when those 6 months pass or however long it takes and they are over the person, go, don't really need to be friends. And so that's just another excuse of staying in touch. It's going to be very, very tempting to look at the Instagram posts when you're feeling lonely late at night to see what they're up to. The problem is, what you're going to see on social media is going to be very, very skewed, because social media is highly curated to begin with. No one goes and puts images of their worst vacation moments on social media. They put their best. No one puts images of themselves vomiting at the end of the party. They have images of themselves happy before that happens. And so what you're going to see there is going to be a highly curated, extremely positive version of your ex seeming extraordinarily happy, surrounded by friends or doing fun things when you're sitting in the corner and crying at home. And so it's going to feel horrible to look at that. And it's also going to feel like, how is that possible? Because just 2 weeks ago, they told me they loved me, and then last week they broke up with me, and now they seem to be completely moved on when I'm a wreck. How is that possible? And that's possible because they might have told you about the breakup last week, but they were thinking about it for way longer. They just weren't telling you. When we're thinking of leaving a relationship, we don't announce that until we're ready. And until we're ready, then we will fake it. We will say, I love you. We will do life as normal until we're ready to pull that plug. And so 2 weeks ago, the person wasn't ready. A week ago, they were. And so it's not that something mysterious happened between 2 weeks ago and 1 week ago to cause a breakup. They just finally were ready, and they've been trying to get ready for a very long time. And so that can be a great rabbit hole for people to go down and figure out what happened that week between the I love you and the breakup, because something crucial must have happened. No, nothing crucial must have happened at all. And usually nothing crucial did. So you want to block all the social media access. You want to block the phone numbers. And you can let the person know, look, I'm going to take a break and block you on social media and text and all, so I don't bother you. But, you know, if it's okay, I might get in touch in a few months' time. Fine, you can say that. But then do it. Remove the temptation. Take the pictures, you know, off your hard drive. You know, like, get the reminders away, because cold turkey is much easier. You know, like if you're trying to quit smoking, taking a drag of a cigarette every couple of days or hours is not going to be useful.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to put it. Do you think, Guy, that we actually, it kind of seems obvious, but or perhaps rhetorical, do you think in 2018 it's much harder to get past a breakup than, say, 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah, 20, 30 years ago, you would literally have to stand outside the window and serenade them to get their attention. and today, I know so many people that they blocked on Instagram, they blocked on YouTube, they blocked on all these different places. But in the moment of weakness, they'll go and reconnect or find another way to, you know, create a new fake profile and follow. So it's so tempting, because you can really spy on that person. You can really have a sense of what they're doing with their life and feel like you're still therefore involved in their life, or that they are still involved in yours in some fashion, which again is the methadone. It's ultimately very unsatisfying. It's ultimately just going to set you back, make it hurt worse in the moment, and make you long for them even more, and make you even more bewildered about why they seem to have moved on so quickly when you were feeling such a wreck. So it's just, there's no good that can come of it, but it's actually very difficult to block all those options, because then you have a third cousin you haven't spoken to for a while, but you remembered, met your ex at a party, and now suddenly they liked something your ex did, and that's showing up in your feed. And so it's actually very difficult to get your arms around all the social media access you might have and electronic access to an ex. So it's much harder than it used to be 30 years ago, for sure.
Yeah, and I think that is definitely a requirement to getting past an ex, especially in the first few months at least. But aside from social media, what else can guys do listening right now? What are some of the other action steps they can take? Because social media is probably one of the biggest ones, I think, and especially when it's so ubiquitous in everything we do, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, everywhere across the board. We're spending so much time on social media. We got to really get that out of our lives, or get them out of our lives, at least for the first few months. But beside that, what are some other action steps?
So one of the things I suggest to people, I say this in the TED Talk as well, is, and in the book, obviously, is that what our mind tends to do when we're heartbroken is to present us, bombard us really, with these idealized images and snapshots of our ex, of the relationship. We tend to feel nostalgic for all the great times and for all the good moments. And we remember their smile and we remember their embrace and we remember this and we remember that. Now, the truth is that they were annoying in all kinds of ways, that, you know, we had plenty of fights. You had to make a ton of compromises to be in that relationship. You know, they didn't like this friend of yours or that parent of yours or that dog of yours or that cat of yours, and et cetera, et cetera. But that's not what we'll remember naturally. Our mind will bombard us with all these idealized images. And so that, again, is going to hurt much more because, A, it's skewed and incorrect, and, B, we're thinking we lost the most perfect person, the only one, our soulmate, et cetera, et cetera. So what we need to do is to balance out those perceptions when our mind is bombarding us with these idealized thoughts and images. And we can't control, I mean, we can't tell our mind, no, don't do that, don't think of how beautiful she looked when she was doing this or that. Not going to be useful. What you can do is balance it out. So every time your mind reminds you about how amazing your ex was, add in a few items about yourself, about remind yourself about, yeah, but they had this incredibly annoying habit, and they were extremely unsupportive about that, and they would always get into a fight with me right before my birthday, and they were a nightmare to travel with. They hated my my mother. They, you know, didn't want to touch my dog. Whatever it is, and I say, create a list on your phone of all the ways that person was imperfect, all your pet peeves about them and about the relationship, all the compromises you made. And whenever you get this idealistic blast of nostalgia in your head, go to your phone and read the balanced out data about, okay, yes, they were all that, but they were this as well. And kind of balance out the picture. Remind yourself you're not trying to recover from a perfect person or a perfect relationship, even if your mind is trying to get you to believe that. You're trying to recover from one that was flawed, that had shortcomings, that had compromises, and it's much easier to get over something more real than to get over something that's very idealized.
Yeah, I love that. I've actually used the list technique a few times in past breakups from relationships. Is there any downside to writing about things that you didn't like about them? Like, this, could this perhaps develop or create some type of negative attitude in yourself, like deep within, say, your emotional psyche of the way, or mental psyche of how you think about women, the opposite sex, or relationships? Can this tend to have, or can this have some type of negative consequence to it? Because I love the fact that you are addressing those things. And when we break up with a woman, or when they break up with us, those first few weeks, those first few months, we tend to think of them in this idyllic sense, and everything's perfect, like you said, and we think of all the nostalgic great times we had with them. But the truth is, there's so much negative to it that we don't think of, because, again, that whole addiction concept where our brain is just totally out of whack and it's focusing on getting us back on that drug. Is there any negative side to this, any negative consequences that could arise?
So look, it's a good question. Let me clarify something. The active ingredient here is accuracy, is realism. The list should not be, she was the devil, she was a spawn of hell, she was the most horrible, but that's not accurate. The accurate list should be, if it was late at night, she would never want to listen to when I wanted to talk about something. She refused to get together with any of my friends, and I lost a couple of relationships because of it. She was really difficult with my mom, or she was extraordinarily messy and unwilling to contribute to shopping for groceries. She, you know, like, so just small, everyday life stuff that is accurate, that is real. And if it's very specific, like that, and it's very accurate like that. There's no reason it should generalize to womankind, because this is not about womankind. This is about her specifically, or, you know, the ex, whoever they are. And so it keep it accurate, keep it specific, keep it real, keep it, you know, in a personal way. She didn't like this position in sex, and I really did, and I really missed that position. Could be one of those things. It's not a slam against women. Some women do. She didn't. So make sure it's very, very specific. You're really just reminding yourself that there were shortcomings here. Not that this was a hellish relationship, because that's not how you feel. Just that it was flawed.
Okay, and if you do start to think of her in some devilish crazy way like that, that's inaccurate, what can that do to you long term?
So what you have to be very careful about is that in any kind of generalization of a group of people, any ism, right, any kind of negative stereotype of a group of people is not going to be useful to you in life, because it will immediately create boundaries, buffers, fences between you and a large swath of humanity, because especially in this country and in many others, you're going to come across all those people in your life, in your work life, in your social life, in your family life, potentially. So creating all kinds of, you know, fences about, you know, like, well, and even if it's a subset, right, even if it's like, well, blondes are always this, redheads are always that, it's absolutely not true that blondes are always anything or that redheads are always anything. They're just not. It's just not true. It's not useful. You might be dismissing somebody. And what if the next blonde is amazing and you're not even going to give her a chance because your ex was blonde and you're never doing blondes again? So it's just not useful. And it's a little immature. So I would really urge people to, this is about one person. And really, this is about recovering and getting over her so you can then go out and find love again. Right, the ultimate goal you have here is to free yourself of that obsession so you can go out and find love again and hopefully form a longer lasting, satisfying relationship. So you don't want to sour yourself on women. You don't want to sour yourself on dating. That's going to absolutely defeat the purpose.
Have you joined the Elite Man newsletter yet? If not, get on it now. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter and sign up to get special Elite Man content not seen nor heard anywhere else. Get all of our bonus podcast information, sneak peeks into upcoming shows, behind-the-scenes content, special offers, and exclusive Elite Man updates you won't find anywhere else. I'm telling you, if you're not on our newsletter, you are absolutely missing out. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter and become a true member of the Elite Man community right now. I look forward to speaking to you soon. elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. Guy, is there any other action steps here to take that you want to mention about making sure guys take and make sure they don't put off like they often do when it comes to a breakup?
There's a certain amount of research about two quick things I'll say. One, if you can formulate in your head a clear understanding of why the breakup happened, of what it was, then the research says that it's a little easier to put aside. None of us have a clear understanding, right? Because thankfully, or for most of us, thankfully, no ex is coming up to us in the breakup talk and saying, here's a very long list of everything I hate about you to explain why I'm leaving. Thankfully, that doesn't get done. So, you know, so that shouldn't be a problem. But you can formulate it, even if it's like she wasn't emotionally available, she wasn't quite ready for the commitment, she was met her high school romance and that got reactivated again, whatever it was that doesn't involve your shortcomings, right? It's not necessary to go to, I wasn't smart enough or tall enough or successful enough. Because if, let's say you were with somebody for a year, whether you were tall enough or smart enough has already been vetoed and they were with you anyway. So it's not relevant. So just come up with some kind of understanding, primarily so you can put that question to rest. Because just asking yourself over and over, which some people do, well, why did that happen? Why did that happen? Is just really a way of staying with the obsessional thoughts about the person. It's still the methadone. And so it's not useful. And just if you don't have an answer at all, make one up. It really doesn't matter. As long, it can be, you know, it just wasn't the right time. Like whatever, but however vague, but settle on something so that question doesn't resonate on and on and on. It's not useful for that question to resonate in that way. Also, another thing we know is that when people, the sooner people can get back into dating, that is obviously correlated with better recoveries, because it's creating more interference in terms of reminding you that there are other people out there. Now, people say, well, when is too soon to get back into dating? And my answer is usually, well, if you're crying during your first date, it's too soon. But if you're not, then it's good enough. Then and you can get through that date, even if you don't really feel a connection or that you can feel a connection yet. But you can do that once in a while just to remind yourself that, you know, there are options out there, that there's new things to look forward to, that there are other women out there, other people out there that you might connect to, relate to. Then that seems like, you know, like a good thing to do if you can do it. If you sit there and you're unable to think of anything but your ex, it's too soon. But you don't have to feel, and now I'm completely over them, to start dating again. You can do that way before you feel completely over a person.
If people follow these steps, they follow your applications, how long does it typically take for someone to get over their ex? I know everybody's different, but generally speaking, are we talking a couple weeks? Are we talking a few months? Are we talking a year, more?
So, you know, I know it's frustrating, but everyone's different, as you said. And it's not just everyone's different. The context is different, right? So here's somebody who's 30 years old, who never really had a serious relationship before, was in a 4-year very serious relationship, and it broke off, and now they feel like, wow, I was never in a serious relationship. I wasn't even able to date that much. It's gonna maybe hit them much more strongly than it might somebody who never had that much trouble getting dates in the first case. And so it depends so much on who you are, on your circumstance, on what's going on in your life. Some people have very demanding work environments. It's a good distraction for them. They can throw themselves into the work. Life goes on in many, many ways. For some people, you know, they just had the kinds of life that, you know, they were so entwined with the other person. So even a short relationship can take a very long time to get over. So I'm extraordinarily hesitant to give very much time frames, because some people will always feel like, well, I'm behind. But there are no time frames. It's a highly individual thing.
Okay. That makes, you know, fair enough. Makes sense. Should they have a game plan before beginning a relationship or getting married into what would happen if they did break up? Like, should this be a thought that pops up? Should they come up with you know, a little strategy, maybe go over some of these steps beforehand and know how they would handle a breakup?
Other than a prenup, no. In other words, I think people need to be very focused on the task of actively and cooperatively building and forming relationships that are as satisfying as they can make them. And people often fall into relationships. And when I ask people at some point during a relationship, even when it's, you know, it's going okay, how much are you working together to make this relationship as satisfying as possible, to address all your needs, to communicate together so you problem solve together, you get over issues and problems together? A lot of people are really on autopilot. And then when things start to go wrong, they can go very, very wrong, because there's no foundation of talking about small issues even. There's no history of one person saying, hey, here's this thing you did that really bothered me, and being able to talk that through. Or one person saying, hey, I know you really don't like my mom, and I'm not saying she's an easy person, but let's figure out how we can, you know, involve them in our lives anyway, and then let's sit together and brainstorm and keep everyone's needs in mind. And then you have this history of working cooperatively, productively as a team to solve problems that will really be useful when you hit problems later on in the relationship. So the focus should be at the beginning of a relationship on how do we build this? How do we communicate well together so we know that it's mutually satisfying, that we can tackle problems that we know are going to come up and challenges that we know are going to come up? That should be the focus when you're forming a relationship.
Yeah, it seems like it might be setting yourself up for failure if you do that, if you kind of have a game plan of giving yourself outs. On the other hand, I'm curious to know what your thoughts are. You mentioned it, what your thoughts are on a prenup. And also, the fact that so many marriages are ending in divorce these days. I don't know what the exact stats are, but I think it's, you know, somewhere from like 1/3 to 50% of marriages in America end up being ending in a divorce. So what are your thoughts on that?
I'm not sure that stat has changed all that much, the divorce rate. I'm not sure they've changed all that, you know, much in a way. But anyway, so it's usually around the 50% mark that things used to be, but whatever. The prenup thing. Prenups are very conflictual processes. There's cases in which it's abundantly obvious one person is significantly more net worth than the other and want to protect their assets. And in that case, it might be obvious. But it's a difficult process because that is what you were saying earlier. That is literally going through the hypothetical of the relationship breaking up and the division of assets. You have to almost go through, not almost, you have to really kind of in your head go through, visualize, role play a divorce and what you want out of it and what you're willing to take or not take from it. So that's not necessarily the best thing. My suggestion about prenups is only one thing, and it's super simple. Do it early, do it quick.
Get it over with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that causing a lot of conflict. Actually, I've spoken to different women over the years of, you know, just kind of asking their hypothetical thoughts on prenups, and I feel like the majority of women get offended or would get offended if their man, if their future husband asked them to do that.
Look, prenups these days, just to be super clear, really work both ways. And so I've in my practice, I've seen as many motivated by the women as by men. And women often out-earn men these days. And so the prenup can really go both ways. And, you know, and it's an equal opportunity offender. Men feel as offended by it often, if not more, than women do.
Really? I would think that the guy would, or the woman would be more offended by it, just because historically guys have like the mindset of being the caretaker, the provider, and I don't know, it just seems like
a, right. So it's a bigger insult then for a lot of men, because okay. A, that it comes up that like no, I'm going to have more money than you and earn more than you, so I need to protect my assets, feels a little rough for some guys.
Gotcha, that makes sense. We talked about breakups in relationships, but you also cover how to get over a death of a loved one, a family member. How does the same type of philosophy apply? Obviously, we're not talking about blocking somebody on social media or the stalker-like behavior, some of the other things, but what are some of the applications that can be had in the loss of a loved one?
So that actually I speak about in my second book, Emotional First Aid. Just to be clear, there's a chapter there about loss. In the How to Fix a Broken Heart book, I talk about the loss of a pet as another kind of form of grief that we don't take seriously and should. Just to be clear where those different things, you know, exist in the books. But the loss of a loved one, it depends who the loved one is, but let's say a first degree relative, depends very much on how much they were a feature of your daily life, in a way. There are some people, for example, who love their parents very much. You know, they see them once a year on the holidays, and they talk to them every couple of weeks on the phone and catch up. And there are some people who talk to their parents every single day, who live nearby them, who see them very, very regularly, who are very much involved in each other's lives. Those losses can feel very different for those two people. And similarly to heartbreak, when we lose an aspect of our daily life, something that we had reminders of from the minute we wake up in the morning, as we go through our day, to the moment we go to bed at night, it is much harder to get over. The reminders are all over the place. Our life is entwined with them in much more fundamental ways, and unraveling that and creating new realities that aren't just sad and empty, but actually meaningful, is a big task, and one that can take time.
So there's a lot of overlap, I think, in the idealizing kind of thing too, like where we're thinking of all the great things that happened with this person, and just thinking like how great life was before with that person and how crappy it's going to be now that they're gone. But it's also like kind of taking a step back and realizing that, you know, some things, obviously it's going to hurt, but you got to move on and recognize that this is like the reality and how life is going to be. It's not the end of the world for you.
No, but it will feel like, to a lot of people, almost like a 2.0, like a reboot, like a new chapter, a new life, because especially when there were years of it, you know, if you were in a relationship for many years, or if you lost someone that had been in your life for many, many years, it feels like, wow, that was that version of me might be different now, because it's going to be a very different life without that person in it. And people can literally feel like this is going to be very much a different chapter. It's not going to be the same life. It's going to feel very different. And it might. And again, this is why this issue of heartbreak and of grief and indeed of any kind of emotional pain and emotional change that we go through is something we have to take so seriously, because it's hugely impactful. These things go to the very core of who we are and how we are in the world and how we feel about ourselves and how we feel about the world, and we need to take them much more seriously than we typically do.
Is there anything different about this approach than that of the relationship breakup? Like, is there any extra step or something that you would do in this approach that you wouldn't necessarily do in the breakup stage?
I wouldn't necessarily, for example, in this approach, I wouldn't necessarily make a list of all the ways, like, you know, if the parent dies, I wouldn't make a list of all the ways that parent was annoying. I don't think that's a useful thing to do. One of the things that we need to do when we lose somebody very significant in that way is try and find some kind of meaning in that loss. That's what we know in the research is associated with the best outcomes, that we find a way to understand the loss, that we can weave it into the tapestry of our lives in a way that gives it some kind of place, some kind of meaning, that there are some ways in which we can grow from it and learn from it. And so it could be our parent dies and we realize, you know, I am spending way too much time at work and not enough time with my own children, and I don't want to miss their childhood and I don't want to miss that part of it, and so I'm going to make real changes in my life, and, you know, almost to honor my parent who died, but in order to then feel more engaged with my family life, because I'm realizing that that's ultimately what's important. So, you know, just as an example, but then if you can find a way to make that loss something that's meaningful, that contributed to positive change, a different perspective in your life, a different insight about life, then that can really help.
Awesome. Just one more question, then I want to wrap things up. I think I heard you mention this before, that the heartbreak that we feel, all the emotions, it's like a survival mechanism, that we actually have this for a reason. Can you just explain that for a minute and talk about why that happens and how to obviously get past that?
So just very, very simply, when you touch a hot stove and it burns when you're a kid, your mind has a job, and that job is to make you be very, very clear that don't get near a hot stove, that hurt, and as long as it reminds you of how much it hurt, you won't get near the stove. And so its job is to keep that pain of that stove as fresh as possible to protect you. It's the same with heartbreak, only in this point you're at cross purposes, because your mind wants you to remember the person. It's why it's making you think all these idealized thoughts about them. Your mind wants you to remember how painful this all is and remember the pain and live the pain as exquisitely as possible, so you don't make that terrible mistake again. Except that's a mistake you actually do want to make again. Not the breakup part, but the falling in love part that preceded it. And so you and your mind are at cross purposes. Your mind is trying to keep the memory of that person as fresh as possible in your mind. Your goal in recovery is to make their presence as diminished as possible in your mind. This is why you have to do the no contact stuff. This is why you have to, you know, minimize the social media stuff. This is why you're trying to think about them less and less and less, even while your mind might be laboring to make you think about them as much as possible.
Guy, it's been an awesome interview, man. I really do appreciate it. Is there a last send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave our Elite Man audience, and then a place that our listeners can check out more about your work and your book?
So yeah, my website is guywinch.com. That's GUYWINCH.com. You'll find links to my two TED Talks. Between the two of them, they have over 10 million views. They're both about emotional health, one about heartbreak, one emotional health more generally. And you'll find links to my books. My books are in 25 languages if you happen to live in a foreign country and prefer a different language. My last thought for listeners is this. Emotional health, and that is just staying happy and satisfied and productive in your life, that doesn't happen on autopilot. It's something we have to be proactive about, knowledgeable about, and take control over. Because just in this last example of how, in the heartbreak instance, our mind will actually work at cross purposes to what our actual goals are, there are many examples like that in emotional health where we can't just leave it up to our mind and to our, you know, instincts, quote unquote, to guide us through the right path. They'll often guide us down the wrong one. So you have to be proactive. You have to get knowledgeable, get aware, get your finger on your pulse, and be active in asking yourself, how am I doing? And if I'm not doing well, where can I get more information? Where can I learn about tools? Where can I learn about techniques? Where can I learn about actions that will help me recover? Most people wouldn't shy away from going to physical therapy if they were limping. You're limping if you're barely walking, really, when your heart is broken. The physical therapy is going to be self-induced. You don't have to run to a therapist, but get the information and do the exercises.
Guys, check out his book, How to Fix a Broken Heart. Guy, thanks again, man, for coming on. I really do appreciate it. I know our guys are going to love this one, so take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, are you following me on Instagram and Facebook yet? If not, stop being a complete weirdo and follow me right now. Seriously, let's connect on the two biggest and best social media platforms in the world, and let's get to know each other a bit more. I post regularly throughout the week and love giving behind-the-scenes updates on the daily life of an elite man. I'm currently most active on Instagram and Facebook, so follow me on both. Get day-to-day updates on book recommendations, biohacking tools, elite man know-how, and all other glorious content I probably shouldn't post about, but do anyways. Whether pics of me trying to conquer the world in my personal life, or whether cutting-edge research on the cures to all disease, keep up to date and have a few laughs by following either, or more preferably, both my social media pages now. I'm at Justin Stenstrom on both Instagram and Facebook, so it should be very easy to find me. That's Justin Stenstrom on both these social media platforms. Follow me now and see exactly what I'm up to throughout the week. Get your daily dose of elite man entertainment and information Sunday through Saturday. Instagram and Facebook at Justin Stenstrom. P.S. If you follow me and send me a message on Instagram, I'll be happy to follow you back. And if you like my Facebook page and message me on Facebook, I'll be just as happy to become your friend on there too. I want to connect with you as much as possible and communicate regularly with my top fans, so do not be a stranger.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.